Welcome to Filmmakers Feedback, a program brought to you by Film Scoring Tips. I am Giovanni Rotondo and I will be your host for this series. The episodes are available as podcasts on all the major platforms and in video form. Make sure you visit filmscoringtips.com to find more info about that. The mission of this show is to better understand the relationship between filmmakers and composers and to find ways to increase one's chances creating long-lasting professional bonds. In this episode, filmmaker David O'Reilly and I discussed how social media helps composers break networking barriers and build a continuative relationship with producers and directors in a subtle and organic way. Thanks for tuning in. Enjoy the show. David, thank you so much for coming to the show.
Thank you very much.
It's a pleasure to have you. There is one question I ask to all my guests. Filmmaker can mean director, producer, writer. What kind of filmmaker are you?
I think I'm all of those. Mm-hmm. I think you have to be at a certain level until you're given that director job or writer job. So I suppose when I'm making short films, I'm the writer, the producer, the director, the caterer. Not the composer yet, the editor in some places. But I suppose as you progress, you drop some of those jobs and begin to focus on writing and directing, I suppose. But I suppose because of my day job, I have a natural inclination for producing as well. So all of the above, it has to be, I suppose.
Cool. Speaking of your day job, you're a location manager by
day.
And I looked at your credit list and I was completely blown away by the titles I've read. You worked on franchises like Harry Potter and X-Men and Star Wars
for 6 years.
I don't know if we can say what you're working on at the moment.
We cannot
but this episode is going we're recording a few months prior to,
okay,
but anyways, let's not
it won't
say,
be out but we've discussed it off camera. It'll be very exciting with great locations,
and I'm waiting for to hear more rumors about it off cameras. But anyways, my question is, do you think as a filmmaker even when you do location?
Yeah, absolutely. I think 100%. I think the job of location scouting, which is what I mainly do, is you're kind of a director for the day. So mm-hmm. you go to a place, you're given a brief, and it'll be abandoned Victorian vaults, and you'll go, okay, well, let's find some. Or you'll interpret the script. So, you know, whilst you're operating, you're a kind of director or a production designer in ahead of them, basically. Mm-hmm. So, and often you're wrong because they have a different vision or the production designer has a different vision. But for the whilst you're out investigating and trying to find something, you're the director. So I think it helps me that I direct, and it helps me that I'm a location scout when I'm directing and producing. And they're intertwined, I think. You have to look at where you place the camera in a place, can completely change it.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously the lighting, wherever you are. So it's kind of, and then your story carries on when you meet the producers and directors and production designer, because then you have to try and sell it in a way that is almost like pitching your location to them, especially if they don't see it the way you see it.
Right. And does music play a role at all in this?
I was thinking about that before. I suppose it doesn't, other than music plays a role in everyone's life anyway.
All right. So as you know, I told you many times, I'm in love with your short film, Kubrick by Candlelight. I think it's brilliant. And is it watchable by everyone?
It's not yet. No, it's because it has a distributor, so we're still doing bits and pieces with him. It's still at the Odd Film Festival. It's in when this comes out, it'll have done a few, but there's a few in the next couple of weeks, and then at some point it will be online.
Is there a website?
There is a website, kubrickbycandlelight.com. There's Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, all of them. I haven't done TikTok. That's the only one I haven't done. I've tried all of them.
All right.
But yeah, so, and it's, you know, it's had a good run. It's been kind of on the road for almost 2 years now.
Can you tell us a little bit about the experience with music specifically?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I suppose as a director, I'm fascinated by music. Probably not in the way that you're, as a composer, you would hope, but in a sort of more, I suppose, Scorsese way, I suppose, of that kind of popular music infusing into the fabric of it. And obviously you've seen Kubrick by Candlelight. It's set in 1973, it's set in Ireland, set in a very specific time. So I had to economically try and ground the film in Ireland, 1973. And the easiest way to do that is with, and obviously it's about a movie, Barry Lyndon, Kubrick's film. So there's music in that. There's music of 1973. Then there's the sort of the soundtrack. So, I mean, I think I'm not sure if it is true, but I've got a feeling the music runs almost from 0 to 18 minutes, 25. It's almost constant music of Kubrick references and then popular music. So we found, my music supervisor, Gavin, who's my cousin, found this an Irish band called Cromwell, who were around in the early 70s, did one fantastic album. And I found them, contacted the lead singer and the owner of the rights, and he very kindly gave us one song and then gave us two songs, which we couldn't have recreated somehow. There's something scratchily rock 70s Ireland about those tracks that have completely, without them, I'm not sure if the film would have hung together in that way. Mm-hmm. It was like Irish rock band from the early 70s. It kind of really gelled the film together in the sense it felt like a 1970s film. But the music for Kubrick by Candlelight was obviously massively important because we had Saraband from Barry Lyndon and we had some Irish music and, you know, and then obviously the 70s music and then tiny little Kubrick cues all the way through because I was trying to stick as many Kubrick references in as possible. So it became a massive, massive job that I hadn't experienced before. I've made short films before and you kind of, you film it and then panic and then try and put some music over it. This was like we had to engage with the music way before we started filming. It was actually part of the script.
Nice.
We needed cues. We needed, or if I say we, in the sense I needed them for the film, if that made sense.
Yeah.
I think they're in the script, but there's certainly references in the script to the music. And if you're making a film about a film, it would be sad if you couldn't use some of the music from the film to kind of connect it as much as possible.
I'm guessing it was doable because many cues were from the classical repertoire, so you could find versions that were licensable.
And then also we had a fantastic composer, Ewan Cowley, who is my second cousin, very family job, who then came together and created some original music.
Oh, okay.
In the style of it. So there's quite a lot.
Tell us more about it.
Yeah, so that was post-shooting. We filmed in December 2016. Then I'm not sure. I think maybe May 2017 was when we did the music. So it was a long gap where we kind of licked our wounds and tried to pay off debts and then came back to it. Now, so we'd always been talking about the music, but then Ewan came on, who was Gavin's cousin and my cousin, started putting, and then we had a finished cut, so he had time to look at the finished cut. I was in London, obviously, he was in the Republic of Ireland, so there wasn't ever that real connection of we sat down and looked at it and talked it through.
The spotting session.
Exactly, that you wrote about in your question. So it was much more, he would send some files to me, what do you think, and I'd send them back, and it wasn't a luxurious process. It was fairly quick because we booked some studio time in this beautiful studio called The Meadow outside of Dublin, which is just
the mixing.
For the mixing and we recorded live music.
So oh, really?
We had Ewan played he's an incredible musician. all kinds of instruments. So we had bowrons, violas, cellos, drums, electric guitar. I mean, in this gorgeous studio in the countryside, we recorded completely fresh music. And then we recorded some of the original music. So Saraband we did again. Karen did this incredible version of that. And so it was as of a day that it took us. It was as good as making the film for me.
Nice.
It was like proper musicians coming in and just knocking it out. You know, sheet music with Kubrick by Candlelight on it. It was an incredible experience. And then that was mixed and then kind of sent back and forth. And yeah, so it was quite a big process.
Let's talk about how composers sometimes reach out to filmmakers, because maybe they know the filmmaker is making a new film,
yeah,
or they watch a film and are touched by it,
sure,
at some level. So do you receive lots of these?
I was thinking earlier, I think I get more emails from composers than almost any other trade.
Sounds about right.
I was going to ask you, but and I found it really interesting that I was sort of going through my old Kubrick by Candlelight emails, and yeah, quite a few. So some before, because I was very open about publicising it, because we had to get all those free things come in. Had a few people contacted me, and then as it's had its festival run, which is lovely. Anyone emailing you after, you know, if you're showing it in New York or somewhere in Italy, or, you know, like, then someone emails you and says, I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
It's an incredible experience.
That's the reason you do it in the first place.
Almost all it is. I didn't realise that. And it was just like these people kind of, it touched them. And they saw it in this small, I can't remember the name of the festival in Italy, which I couldn't go to, but it was fantastic. Look, and they showed it on a canal. The cinema was on the canal.
Nice.
And I just had loads of people emailing me saying, yeah, I saw your film one summer's evening. And so that's fantastic. And then, yeah, composers, funny enough, I've had quite a few. And the terrifying thing is they're usually sending it when you're in your down phase, which is the film's out and you're trying to scramble around to think of what you're going to do next. Mm-hmm. And so it's probably a good time for them. But also it's, you almost want a DOP or a writer or a producer to contact you at that point, because mm-hmm. you're kind of looking for the next. The composer is the person that at that point, you know, you have to write back very politely and say, look, I'm going to keep all your stuff and I've got your link and everything and I've listened to your music. I'm not sure where I'm going just next. Hopefully they believe that, but it's sort of true. You know, you put it aside and you go, you know, because we're not always working, you know.
So this is the first tip about this topic you're giving. Timing is very important.
Timing, yeah, and you'll never know that. It's just the luck of...
Or maybe, you know, nowadays there are ways with IMDb Pro and...
Yeah, and to keep in contact. And we are on Facebook and, you know, you engage with someone on social media, then you're always following them. If you send the email and introduce yourself, it's a perfectly good way. I think engage with them on social media, then... rightly or wrongly, they've become part of your life, so they know what's happening with the film and you know what's happening with them if they've got something coming up, and you can kind of, you know, in tandem kind of keep in touch with each other without really engaging and saying, my next job, I'd like to talk to you. You're kind of growing together, and then you can kind of interact when you say, oh look, you've got that thing coming up, I'd love to see that film that you've just composed the track for. And I think that's probably a key way to do it. And I really like the emails because they're always very genuine from everyone, but composers are very, it's quite an open, like we all do, it's kind of emailing someone or contacting someone saying that you like their stuff and I'd love to work with you. It's quite a leap of personality,
yeah,
isn't
yeah.
it?
Can you isolate one detail on or common detail on these emails that really catches your attention in a positive way? Is there, you know, one thing that wins you over every time?
I don't know. I mean, I think it's, for me, it's a kind of luck, isn't it? If the composer reaches out to you and they compose or have composed something that you really engage with straight away. So thematically, I make comedy films to a certain extent, romantic comedies. So I suppose they're not known for their great compositions of music, but there are plenty. But so I suppose if someone contacted me and they did very, very morose drama music, which is fantastic for its particular genre, that wouldn't engage me. So I suppose that's the key, is if you're reaching out to someone, they have to do a bit of research too, which is, you know, if they're going to send it to you and you go, this doesn't sound like anything I'm ever going to do. Now, they don't know that. My next film could be a horrible hostage drama or what, you know what I mean? But realistically, that's my genre, which is comedy.
So it would be good for
them. So it still has to be pinpointed.
Right. And it would be good for them if they've done their research and there is, you know.
Even if they could point to a film or a piece of music that they did.
Or a playlist.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And just say, I'm doing a variety of things. And obviously, everyone has fantastic websites these days, or they have SoundCloud. Mm-hmm. And so there's many ways to kind of engage you. I can't pinpoint exactly what would. I suppose it's
no,
like,
but that makes sense. That's very helpful. I'm thinking, you know, a composer that wants to work with a particular filmmaker and knows the filmmaker only does horror.
Exactly.
That composer would create a bespoke playlist.
Yeah.
Because there are two philosophies a little bit. There are composers who specialize in one genre and stop doing anything else.
Yeah.
And there are composers who like to do many different genres.
Absolutely.
And sometimes they are pigeonholed. Sometimes they self-pigeonhole by creating websites that resonate. But in all these cases, they can still send people bespoke playlists or create bespoke showreels, you know, stuff like that. So that's, I think it's very good.
And I think it's just that initial snag, like any kind of selling or kind of
makes sense.
It's just like, and I don't get thousands of emails, but you know, one every couple of weeks, or maybe, you know, when the film was out at its best, there was a week or something like that, and then you're busy, but it's just that it's the email and then that kind of first link, whatever that first link is, kind of almost has to work and draw you in and kind of. And make you go, okay, well, I'm going to listen to one more track. And and then you're not giving that person the job tomorrow, but you're putting it aside in your head for next time.
The next job is following up.
Exactly.
And absolutely. Creating
absolutely. See who's available and then
reaching out. For the composer as well. Like,
be present
in your life again.
Yeah. But I think social media is, like you said, is a really good way of just continuing that relationship without pestering, but also then both of you are kind of. So I did meet a composer at a film festival a couple of years ago, and we went drinking, and he obviously said to me, "I'd love to work with you at some point," and we're like, "Yeah, absolutely," and then we engaged on social media, and that's still how we keep in touch.
Mm-hmm.
So I see what he's up to, he sees where the film's going and hopefully what I'll be doing next. And so actually there's much more of a friendly social relationship.
Which is what networking
should
be
about. Which
is what
it's all about, you know. I
think the topic of social media is a very hot one because it's still very, very new, especially for work and especially for creative work.
Yeah.
How do you use social media in a way that helps you get work?
Mm-hmm.
So I love that you mentioned this because I can ask you a question that I think it's very useful to hear from directors. First of all, which social media networks you use the most?
Well, I suppose, you know, we're getting older now. I suppose we're still on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
And good or bad, Facebook still, for me, still is the touchstone for filmmaking, funny enough. Various groups that we're both members of and various initiatives that you've started yourself. It still feels like the best place. It's always the first place I make an announcement about my film because it's slightly bigger generational now, so there's older people on it and youngsters are kind of drifting away from Facebook, and probably a lot. But I'm also on Twitter and Instagram and probably something else, and LinkedIn, and you know, LinkedIn less so. I don't really use that, but Facebook, Twitter, Instagram obviously are the key social medias, I suppose, for a certain age. And that still remains where I get most of my content contact from. So mm-hmm. Facebook, people contact you all the time, actors and not so much composers on Facebook, but a lot of actors and collaborators, just because it's sort of, there's an invitational openness about social media, which means that email that you send to a director feels like you have to build up to write it. So me sending my film to a producer saying, please like me, you know, like it's quite a leap. Like social media breaks all of that down and you can just go, oh, Giovanni made friends with me. Who is he? And then all of a sudden we're talking like on a chat forum and you're like, okay, well, we've broken that all down. What are you doing? Can you come and do this? You know, like it's, so that's what's fascinating about it, is breaking down all of that. What, I suppose in the film industry, what has broken down that feeling that you couldn't? You know what I mean? Like the film industry in the UK certainly still has that tag of, well, you know, working class people can't get into it, or I can't get into it because it's run by, you know, the BBC elite, or, you know, like all of those, I think, unfortunately, myths about the film industry can be broken down by social media straight away, because you'll see, obviously, in the BFI and BAFTA crew network, all these people just thrown into one group of, you know, of Facebook and all talking and kind of sharing their projects and different, you know, some fascinating things. Yeah. Every day I look at it and you go, you know, here's a DOP putting on his showreel, and you're like, you would almost never see that. That guy would have to contact you to be looking for work, and somehow all of a sudden you've seen this guy.
And for me, the credibility of the group is key.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, I would probably not watch a DOP showreel because it has no professional use to me.
Yeah, yeah.
But sometimes I do, when the groups are of people that, you know, I respect the group, I know it's credible.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why not?
I think you're probably right. I think, yeah, it has to be within a kind of safe content zone of that, you know, that the people in it are selected and up and coming, and there's some incredible talents in there. So you kind of just, it's less kind of controlled in the sense you're kind of sitting there going, I'm looking for a DOP. It just kind of wafts past you and you kind of say, oh, look, that guy's interesting, and you know that you put it away in your kind of social media Rolodex until you're looking for people, and then all of a sudden it changes. Then the dynamic changes. You're like, right, we're shooting in a couple of months' time, I need DOP, and
you're in,
then you're in a different mode. Zone. Now some people are constantly in that zone of, they're working on a 1 minute short and then they're putting together a feature and they're constantly, so that becomes then really valuable because they're constantly reviewing people's work, composers and DOPs, and like it's coming, they can invite the content in because if you're not interested you keep going, but if you're really on the hunt then all of a sudden it comes out of everywhere. I'm less so, I'm still trying to put the next thing together, but it's but as soon as that's on, then it's all of a sudden your eye focus changes to what you're seeing and hearing. So then all of a sudden all of my composers come out of the book again, and I start looking at who I'd like to meet and have a chat with and see what they're doing, and you know what I mean. So all of a sudden then your the focus changes.
But and then that makes sense. But let's focus on the previous phase, the one where you are not really actively looking.
Yeah.
I'm interested in knowing if there is a common trait of composers' posts that catch your attention. Like what kind of posts? The ones with this is my latest track, or here is the trailer of a film I just did, or what?
I think it's a bit of that. I think it's composing is a visual art. I mean, that's the, so I think it's when someone says, I think if it's a link to SoundCloud, I'd be less inclined to click on it. But if it's a link to a trailer or a scene, then I'm in, because you're because that's the job, isn't it? I mean, it's not in of itself. It's, I know soundtracks are in of itself, but it should be interacting with the visuals.
Yeah.
And so certainly on the BAFTA group as an example, when that clicks up and there's like, here's a trailer of my new film, and for the film that I've done the music on, I'm absolutely much more inclined, because you're also looking at 20 or 30 other different things that are happening. Obviously they're introducing themselves as a composer, but you're then going, okay, so who was the DOP on this? So but all that melds in together. So if it's all working, it's the composer that you'll remember, because he introduced you to that world.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's definitely a visual hit, and certainly social media is very good for that. You can put the video there, embed it, and it's right there for a click. I think the moment we're so used to social media and the internet being so quick, I think any time where there's more than two clicks to get to the final solution, you're like, I'm done. It's awful, awful kind of mentality, but that is kind of our lives now. And I think certainly those embedded videos with either a scene or a trailer, I'll hit it to look at.
That's very good advice. So embed instead of putting out links or stuff like
that. If you can, I know, I try. It's difficult, yeah, sometimes.
For instance, with Facebook, you can embed, but it's still, you still need to click.
To go to
if you upload the video on Facebook directly, it's much more consumable.
Yeah, I think that's it. And it's awful, but that's our lives, isn't it? We're bombarded with so much material. It's the moment you have to go one step further. It's very lazy, but that's the art of selling, isn't it? It's like, bang, okay, there you go, and I can watch that. And then if I want to go further, I can double click and go where I need to go with it. But that's definitely how I react.
Makes sense. What you just said opened the way for two different topics that I'd like to touch. The first one is the quality of the visual that you put out. When talking about a composer's website, in particular, and a composer's showreel, I should say, I think you kind of answered that, but do you think the quality of the visual is important as the quality of the music or more?
I think, like we said, I think it engages you initially. And it depends, I suppose. If you're a working composer, or you're up and coming, you haven't gotten a huge amount of films that you've done the music for, then I think I'd be quite engaged with someone who's taking footage from one of those websites that we said, you know, those footage websites,
right,
loosely cutting it together or something, and then creating their own kind of what our mission later on is, you know, that kind of thing. I think that's interesting. It's an interesting exercise for the three guys that have and ladies that have done my film, just taking Hollywood movie and killing the sound off it and then putting your own music on it. That's a fascinating kind of jobbing process as a composer, I suspect, but I might be wrong.
I'll be a terrible host here and use these opportunities to plug something that we are running on our web on Film Scoring Tips. We opened a subscription based kind of patronage subscription where the users can help us build more content. All the regular content is still free. Extra content like a new podcast we are designing. It will be possible once we reach a certain threshold of patrons.
Mm-hmm.
And in exchange for that, we are creating exclusive content. For instance, I don't know if you are if you know all these Creative Commons fields.
Yeah, yeah.
There are quite a lot, and we are recreating the sound of the scenes so that there's no music. People can use those scenes that are very professional, very good looking, and they can use it legally, so they can put it on their website. I think this is needed, much
absolutely
needed. And there's even one free scene for everybody to download, you know, try before you buy.
I think it's fantastic. Yeah. I think that's exactly, if I was a composer and I was starting out, that's what I would be doing on the quiet. I would be taking a scene from Batman or something like that and stripping it down and then seeing what I could do with it. And obviously, as you know very well, you can completely change the direction of the scene or the mood of the entire film by whatever kind of music mood that you go. So I think that's a fascinating resource that people will have to kind of work out, basically, as if they were in a gym, isn't it? I mean, just kind of working and working. Now, obviously, composers and musicians are doing their own thing as well, creating music, that's their thing. But that's the real meat and potatoes of work, isn't it? It's like, here's the visual.
And I was asking you the quality of the visual, and because this was one of the things I really, really wanted to make sure it was spot on, right. Footage and video and video clips and films that look great, and if they are used in a showreel, they really can
raise
attention.
I think it raises the game of the composer as well. If they're working with something that looks great, then it's you feel like it's usable and it's going to do you good, isn't it?
Yes. So thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to plug the new service. It's available at filmscoringtips.com/content.
I saw it on the website, and that's why it was in my head.
Oh, maybe, yes. But, okay, so back to showreel. So the quality counts, the quality of the visuals, but then, of course, the quality of the music.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the art form, isn't it? About how they interact with each other.
Do you prefer... You kind of said that, speaking of social, but on a website, on a composer website, do you prefer to go straight to the showreel, or do you equally like to listen to just music without visual?
The ones that I've been on, I think once you're in, I think that's that you've made a leap anyway as a user. Mm-hmm. You've gone from a social media link to going to the website, or from the email to the website.
Right.
I think once you're in, and as long as it's not... This is for all websites and all filmmakers. If it's not too busy and complicated and it feels smooth and the interaction between page to page is kind of user friendly, then I'm inclined to kind of explore. Mm-hmm. You know, I'd obviously always fascinated about who people are, you know, what their story is. And then click into some music and... But I suppose, hitting it first. I suppose if it was a director's website or a DOP, I suppose you get hit first by the showreel.
Right.
I think that's the entrance door to any creative website, I suppose, is seeing a quick précis of their work. So I suppose it's harder for a composer because you don't want to put in 2 seconds of one track and then 2 seconds of other. You want people to kind of get in. Right. So I suppose it's a scene of some kind or absolutely. I'm into the next page to kind of look at the credits and see what different kind of styles they've done and whether they are the kind of person that works to each film and then kind of makes something great for each film, or they're very much focused on a way of working in a genre that means you have to go to them with a horror or a drama or a comedy. But I think, once you're kind of in that first step, people can make very good websites now. And I think a part of our lazy social media life is it almost has to be a good website now because you're so used to that user-friendly experience. You hit it, and then if it's complicated, people kind of go, I don't really get it. And then deep down in your subconscious, you begin to think, but if this is them. The website is you. So if it's sort of tricky to use, is this person going to be tricky to work with?
That makes
sense.
It does. It's a huge tip.
If it's very psychological. It's all about expense and time. And a composer isn't a website designer, and neither am I. But if it feels like a good experience, that's gone into the back of your head. That there's a kind of smoothness and a kind of...
You can project your personality through your website.
I think so. And of course, if you're making crazy rock music for films or comedies or whatever, then that's reflected in there too. There's a kind of craziness in the visuals or whatever it is. So I think, for any creative, I think the website, the way into you should really reflect what you're about. And if you're very melodic, quiet music that's fantastic, then the website should feel... calming and kind of smooth access into the various other tracks. So I've made that up, but I believe it to be true. Mm-hmm. That it kind of should reflect the experience that you're hoping to give the director and the producer.
I hope you're enjoying the show. Please visit filmscoringtips.com to find additional resources for this episode. Look for the area labeled Labs if you would like to help us shape our content in the future, and to send us tracks that we will review with our guests on future episodes. To find more about this and to understand what I mean, stick around for the next segment.
We talked about Kubrick by Candlelight, and it's also the subject of our little experiment. Mm-hmm. You selected a clip from the film. It's a very fun clip, and I think it's a great one. Probably the viewer didn't have too much context.
Yes.
How it worked within the film, but it's part of the experiment.
Absolutely.
It's good to see, how from just a little piece of content, the ideas start flowing.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But you did give them some instructions.
Yes.
I have them printed here if you want to read them out. Or.
So I suppose outside of this, the context is this is 3/4 of the way through the film, and our two male leads are about to. It's been building up. So I suppose it has. What I said was, I was looking for the scene is a sense of foreboding which explodes into a barnstorming, amateur, messy fight between two love rivals. The culmination of much pent-up aggression. The brief to the actors on the day was Hugh Grant and Colin Firth fighting in Bridget Jones' Diary, which was a terrible fight. So that was the brief to the actors. And then the brief to the composer was music in the fight for The Quiet Man, which is a classic Technicolor Irish John Wayne film. And then I told the guests, remember, this is a light-hearted romantic comedy with Kubrick references set behind the scenes of Kubrick's filming of Barry Lyndon in Ireland in 1973. So I think without the context of where it is in the film and also the other music that's led to it, I remember exactly almost being in a similar room to this editing it, and we edited the fight, and the fight looked fantastic, and there was just something horribly wrong about it. And what was wrong about it was that it looked fantastic. So we went back and started again, and we kept saying Colin Firth and Hugh Grant, who fight awfully and they're going through windows, but it's real schoolyard fighting. And we kind of deconstructed it again, that it didn't look good. They're not cool. They're really scrappily fighting. They're not great fighters. It's not John Wayne. So that in the editing process, that's how we kind of found where the comedy was in the scene. We had to kind of keep reminding ourselves, it's a fight, obviously, and it's the end of this pent-up aggression, but also it's rubbish. It's a rubbish fight.
Makes sense.
And then when I came to do the music with Ewan, it was kind of that reference of kind of, it's awful to say, but kind of traditional Irish music, like you would have a kind of bar brawl or, you know. And obviously in the original, it's very, very good music. So that was kind of, that's the brief. So it's a tough,
right.
It's a tough one.
Let's see how our audience did. We'll start with Julia Lesnici, who's a show regular.
You're robbing Peter to pay for Paul. Paul?
We're robbing the church to sell candles to Stanley Kubrick.
I would just stop.
It's what a big man would have wanted.
Paddy, out.
It's Mick.
Mick, Paddy, it's all the same to me. Out.
All right, Nick, I'll see you down the road.
Fucking wanker, yeah, see you down the road.
Satisfaction or something, Mark? Because I can't get no satisfaction. I can't get...
From what I've heard, you've had plenty.
Go on, Brett. You're tired.
I'm tired of you, mate. It's just that... Mary... Mary...
Oh, quite contrary. Is that
Claudia, is it? All right, what's the matter?
Gentlemen, you can't fight in here. This is the wardrobe room.
Fantastic. Yeah, it was really, really interesting. And that's the first time I've heard that one. I have heard the other two, but it felt very complete within the film. It's quite interesting. And you've obviously heard the original. It's very different. Our version's much more kind of tribal at the beginning, with Bowron playing and kind of very ominously starting. But actually, that the music between the when the guys are talking,
yes,
is very in keeping with the film and the kind of the era, the 1770s era rather than the 1970s. But yeah, it's interesting, and it's quite tough because that we struggled with the fight on many levels, filming it, editing it, and composing for it. And so it's a tricky one for anyone to even take on.
I agree. Yeah.
But it's it felt very could be rich, and it's got the instruments. Now, obviously, as a composer, you'll tell me I'm wrong, but it's got the instruments that I assume are in the film, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So yeah. It's true. Yeah. Yeah.
It's flutes and kind of there's sort of the orchestras in there messing around, which is really kind of nice, a nice feeling in the background.
So the next one is by Jake C, nickname Jabu.
Mm-hmm.
You're robbing Peter to pay for Paul. Paul?
We're robbing the church to sell candles to Stanley Kubrick.
I would just stop.
It's what a big man would have wanted.
Paddy, out.
It's Mick.
Mick, Paddy, it's all the same to me. Out.
All right, Nick, see you down the road.
Fucking wanker, yeah.
See you down the road. Satisfaction or something, Mark? Because I can't get no satisfaction. I can't get...
From what I've heard, you've had plenty.
Go on, Brett. You're tired.
I'm tired of you, mate. It's just that... Mary... Mary...
Oh, quite contrary.
Gentlemen, you can't fight in here. This is the wardrobe room.
Amazing. Completely different,
very different
vibe altogether. I mean, certainly got the impending doom in the initial conversation very well. And it had a slightly 70s twang, I suppose, a kind of spaghetti western vibe, which which I obviously didn't give as a brief, but actually fits the scene just as well as kind of crazy Irish music as well, like kind of the two cowboys, and you know, like, so I like that. And then it becomes a kind of jazz mess, which is perfect for the fight. Jake is getting completely in a different way to Julia, getting close to the fight idea, which is it's really messy. Obviously, it's part of my brief, kind of weirdly cut because it's sort of, you know, non-consequential. All the kind of shots are all different bits. So they've definitely followed that,
and you can hear that in the music as well with those synths.
It felt really messy, which fit the scene fantastically well. But a completely different vibe, and there's certain sounds that I probably wouldn't on the next stage that I would take out. That kind of orchestral sound I would take out. If he had stuck to the twang throughout that conversation, I would have been really happy. Really strip it down, just that sort of foreboding twang all the way to the fight, I think would have been fantastic. He sort of telegraphed the fight coming, which in our music we build up to it really quickly as it's building up after Mary Mary Quite Contrary.
Okay, next is Chris Penn. This is, I think, the second time Chris participates in the show. And it's going to be another different take.
You're robbing Peter to pay for Paul. Paul?
We're robbing the church to sell candles to Stanley Kubrick.
I would just stop.
So what a big man would have wanted.
Paddy, out.
It's Mick.
Mick, Paddy, it's all the same to me. Out.
All right, Nick, I'll see you down the road.
Fucking wanker, yeah, see you down the road.
Demand satisfaction or something, Mark? Because I can't get no satisfaction. I can't get...
From what I've heard, you've had plenty.
Go on, Brett. You're tired.
I'm tired of you, mate. It's just that Mary... Mary...
Oh, quite contrary.
Gentlemen, you can't fight in here. This is the wardrobe room.
Again, it's fascinating to see different people's personalities on screen. I really like that as well. I think there's a real sort of 70s rock underlying to it, which fits the brief as well. And he gets the ominous tone very well through the opening sequence. And then it goes into that. I'm trying to think what it sounds like, but it sounds like a soundtrack to a movie that I may have even worked on. But the kind of guitar during the fight is fantastic.
Yeah, and there is some Irishness to
definitely,
it.
Definitely, yeah. No, it reminded me, we couldn't afford it, but when I first did the fight, I have to find it somewhere. We cut it to Thin Lizzy, Whiskey in the Jar.
Okay.
And then we actually went through the process of trying to buy it and then realising it's going to be quite expensive. And I think we actually cut, or I cut it, the first time we cut that fight, it was to an actual 70s all-out rock fight. So there's elements of that there, which is quite interesting. They reminded me of where we started with it, which was that they were going to fight to kind of 70s music, and then through the process of working with Ewan and Gavin and all those guys, it became much more a traditional Irish jig, you know, that they're fighting to. And of course, I suppose when you've seen the original, it's they're kind of dancing, mm-hmm. you know, like there's a step, he steps on the floor to a kind of beat, and there's a kind of dance element to yes. it, very bad Irish dancing. But that was part of the concept of the film. But it's interesting that this is Chris, isn't it? Chris gets it too. They've all three of them get it, which is really fascinating.
Before we say goodbye, I would love to ask you if you have one last piece of advice that you would like to give composers who are listening to us.
I think keep grafting and keep doorstepping people that you like of all categories. So if you see my short film and you'd like to work with me, send it to me. But I equally don't feel like you, and this goes for everyone in the film industry, don't feel like the door's closed for you not to contact another director that's made a great film that's just come out that is in the cinemas. And there's no closed door anymore. You can reach out to anyone, and who knows what will come out of it.
Lovely. Thank you so much, David. It was a real pleasure to have you.
Thank you.
That's our show for today. Amazing guests are joining me on the next episodes. One way to be updated on the podcast's programming is to like and follow our Facebook page. Type facebook.com/filmscoringtips on your browser to find it. Now go create something special. I'll see you soon.